Welcome, everyone. A few people are just coming in and getting their seats. This evening's events are being live streamed on the web, and so we're asking all our speakers to use this microphone so that it can go out there. And at the end, when you're wanting to ask questions, we'll have people with microphones that will hold the microphone for you. And feel free to ask your questions in English or in French, and we'll work with that. So, officially, welcome to the session on building policy for the social economy colloquium, Formuler une politique pour l'économie sociale. It's wonderful to see people here, new faces as well as faces that are already familiar. I'd like to thank the sponsors for tonight. Of course, the Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council, the Sociology and Anthropology Department here at the Mount, the Dean of Arts and Sciences here, and the Community Services Council at Newfoundland and Labrador. I also want to welcome Ron Fournier. He's going to be working very hard as our interpreter throughout the colloquium. My name is Leslie Brown, and I'm the chair of the Department of Sociology and Anthropology here at the Mount, and I'm also the director of the Social Economy and Sustainability Research Network, the Partenariat sur l'économie sociale et la durabilité, in which I work with co-director Penelope Rowe, at my far left here, who's the CEO of the Community Services Council, and she is also a co-chair of this colloquium. And Luc Thériault, who's in the Sociology Department at the University of New Brunswick, and Seth Asimakis, who is the manager of the St. John Community Loan Fund. And our network is funded by a grant that came from the Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council in 2005-2006. They funded six regional networks of community and university partners who were to do research on the social economy. They also funded a Canadian hub, which brought together all the regional networks as well as other national and international partners. So it's really quite if you think about our network is something around 100, and that's replicated right across the country 6 and 7 times, you can see that it's quite an elaborate group. Quebec, which has led the way in Canada regarding social economy research and policy analysis, has a research network that has helped the rest of Canada understand one example of a regime in which public policy is framed for and around and in many respects with the social economy. They in turn are, we hope, learning from the rest of Canada other types of ways of working with the social economy. The 5-year funding, we're entering the 5th year now, has enabled us to learn from and collaborate with one another. It's been quite a journey to get to this colloquium. As far back as 2006, l'Alliance de Recherche Université Communauté en Économie Sociale at Quebec, or UQAM, led by Jean-Marc Fantin and co-directed by Nancy Nimton from the Chantier de l'Économie Sociale, and our Atlantic group, began talking about the idea of having a policy-focused colloquium which would bring together not only our own networks, but also members of the public, students, social economy practitioners, people working in government, to share knowledge and to learn from one another. The Social Economy Research Networks of Northern Canada joined with us, and they're directed by Chris Southcott, and they're contributing especially their work in Labrador and Northern Quebec, or Nunavik. So all the various logos are on the slide over there for you to see. The Canadian Hub, directed by Rupert Downing and Ian McPherson, has been a major supporter and partner in this endeavor as well. Through these community university research alliances, social economy practitioners, academics, students, collaborating institutions, government agencies, and community partners have come together to study the social economy because they believe it to be a vitally important segment of Canadian society. Each team member contributes their depth and breadth of experience in the social economy and in research and in practice within Canada and in many respects abroad as well. So the posters you see around the room come out of some of the social economy research projects done in Quebec and in the Atlantic region and in Labrador. And these are the projects that have a specifically policy focus or in which the policy relevance of their work has been brought out. Now, some of you, I know, are sitting there saying, well, why is there such interest in the social economy anyway? And what on earth is it? And why should I care? Well, the chances are that you live at least part of your life in the social economy, and there's no doubt that you have benefited from it in some way. There's no single definition of the social economy, but it includes nonprofit organizations, cooperatives, social enterprises, foundations, charities, credit unions, mutuals, community development organizations, a wide range of organizations that maybe you can start pulling out some ideas about why they might be similar. They all contribute, certainly, in fundamental ways to the quality of life in Canada. Discussions of the social economy are premised on the view that the social and the economic are intertwined, interpenetrated, that they are, as part of society, things economic and things social are embedded as well in an ecosystem. So thinking about the environment is important. While for some purposes analytically distinct, the social, the economic, the environmental, in practice, they often aren't. And talking about the social economy allows these silos to shrink and the focus to shift, an economy to serve people, not people to serve the economy. Consultant and activist Lynn Eakin talks about a public benefit economy to speak about some of these same things, and emphasizes that the criteria for success in the public benefit economy or the social economy are not the same as the criteria that one might use in the conventional economy or in conventional class society. Organizations and associations within the social economy are rooted in local communities, are independent of government. Social economy organizations are democratic or at least participatory, and they use many types of resources, pull them together in a socially owned entity that prioritizes social objectives and social values. While they may intend to make a profit, they do so in a context that sees profit as a means to meet social goals, not primarily as a means to create individual wealth. They may rely on volunteer labor, partially or exclusively, but many of them do have paid employees. The social economy can be characterized by mutual self-help initiatives, by initiatives as well to meet the needs of the less advantaged people in society. Human Resources and Skills Development Canada, which I think when they wrote this was Human Resources and Social Development Canada, says the social economy is a grassroots entrepreneurial not-for-profit sector based on democratic values that seeks to enhance the social, economic, and environmental conditions of communities, often with a focus on their disadvantaged members. So you can go to their website and see that. Think about your own community, the nonprofit or cooperative daycares, the credit union, the Meals on Wheels, the hospital auxiliary, the community-owned recreation center, and so on. Note that these examples have qualities that place them as a part of the economy. Well, the economy, the arrangements through which we meet our needs through the production and distribution of goods or services. A place where people are employed or where, through contracts and purchasing and so on, money moves around within the community to the advantage of the community. A place where people are trained so that they can do their work, but also gain valuable skills and experiences that affect the wider economy. Meet the needs of those who have disabilities or who are marginalized in various ways. All those elements are still economic in fundamental ways. And of course, social. The organizations I just mentioned are social. Well, what's social about? Social is about values and beliefs. And in this case, we're talking about values like social justice, solidarity, democracy, protection of our ecosystem or our environment. And social is also about social structures and institutions, formal and informal organizations, networks that allow us to communicate, learn, share, act, create community, and meet our needs. And the social and the economic are necessarily interpenetrated. In Atlantic Canada, there are more than 20,000 nonprofit organizations, cooperatives, credit unions, and mutuals. These organizations employ more than 115,000 people, many of whom are full-time. And almost every Atlantic Canadian is a member of at least one such organization. Now, while this is to some extent changing, outside of Quebec, we're not used to thinking of all these types of organizations together as some kind of sector or as a social economy, a sector that both complements and offers alternatives to the conventional economy and government-run initiatives, a sector that both needs a voice in the development and delivery of policies and programs and that has much to offer to deliberative policy dialogue. The data and the experiences of many Canadians tells us that maybe it's time we did think about it this way. And if we do, well, what then? What examples of such an approach can we point to? What works in what we already do? What are the opportunities and challenges of building an enabling environment for the social economy? This, then, begins the work of our colloquium and what follows from it. So I'm glad you're here with us tonight. It's my distinct pleasure to be able to introduce to you tonight, for those of you who may not already know him, the Honorable Percy Parris, who's Minister of Economic and Rural Development, Minister of Tourism, Culture and Heritage, and Minister of African Nova Scotian Affairs. The Department of Economic and Rural Development is one of the supporters of this colloquium, and we're very grateful for their involvement and their interest. Now, when I read the minister's biography, I noticed that he is himself actively involved in the social economy, primarily as a volunteer. His website lists among his many involvements Teamwork Cooperative, so there we've got co-op, Dartmouth East Black Learning Center, and the Metro Center for Persons with Disabilities, so we've got nonprofits in there as well. I'm delighted to invite Minister Parris to bring greetings from the Government of Nova Scotia.
Thank you, Dr. Brown, President McDonough, distinguished guests, community members, ladies and gentlemen, those visiting from out of town. I just want to say is that a week ago, the last time I was in a public microphone was a week ago, last Friday morning in Truro, and I know a couple people were at that event, so they can support me on this, and I started off by saying that I was going to speak for a couple of hours, and there was great laughter in the audience, and an hour and a half later, they knew I was serious. So if your seatbelts aren't fastened, please do so. Madame Boulin, bonjour, comment allez-vous? Buenos dias. It's a pleasure to join you at this conference that emphasizes the importance of fostering a social economy. We are pleased to be your host. I trust that you will enjoy our Nova Scotian hospitality. The government of Nova Scotia recognizes that sustainable communities are vital to the future strength and prosperity of our province. In order to create prosperity, we must ensure a balance of economic, social, cultural, and environmental systems. Looking inward at our assets and strengths helps us to embrace success. One of the greatest resources we have to offer is our human resource. Our people are the strength of communities. By encouraging community-driven leadership and empowering our youth, we will nurture the leaders of tomorrow. Our youth are the faces of our communities, and we must offer opportunities to keep them here in our province. With government support to empower our leaders, Nova Scotia's community development policy was launched in 2004. It strives for balance and a shared vision based on collaboration, partnership, and leadership. Our Balnine Celebrating Communities Conference and Awards took place in Truro last week, and it is an excellent example of how people are doing great things in their communities to create a better place to live, work, and play. At this conference, we saw firsthand how communities really define the whole realm of possibilities. This conference, along with a number of training and funding programs, are key components to our policy, which embraces our diversity. This province also supports the work of the Business Alliance for Local Living Economies, otherwise known as BALLE. By bringing together the right ingredients to build local economies while going beyond traditional success measures. Nova Scotia's economic growth strategy, opportunities for sustainable prosperity, and our environment goals and Sustainable Prosperity Act together aim to create one of the most sustainable and prosperous places to live by 2020. The social policy framework is an important part of ensuring a prosperous Nova Scotia by linking the health of the economy, the environment, and our people, by linking them all together. We know it is important for government to support our people and communities in taking charge of their own futures. And this is why we are investing in strong and sustainable communities. For instance, the broadband for rural Nova Scotia will make this province one of the most connected jurisdictions, not only in Canada, but in North America. Access to high-speed internet is critical for the future of our diverse communities. By making this important service available, the province is encouraging people to build careers, raise their families, and enjoy the advantages of living in rural Nova Scotia. We have many examples of successful leaders living in rural parts of the province who have overcome more trying times outside of their experience with dial-up internet. The community of St. Andrews is a Celebrating Communities Award winner among many impressive finalists and outstanding youth nominees. This community, St. Andrews, excludes sustainability. For example, community members ran their own electricity. They built a house to operate the first phone system and established the first system of running water into the community. It boasts the first cooperative store in Nova Scotia and, more recently, the first funeral cooperative study group. By pooling their resources, ideas, talents, and their passion, this community has built and set up meeting and recreational facilities, trails, study groups, and has secured crucial services. In Nova Scotia, we like to think of ourselves as leaders in building cooperatives from the ground up. Father Moses Cody has played an important role in the cooperative movement across Canada. We have many successes in well-known cooperatives such as Scottsburn Dairy, which employs 100 people in Pictou County and has almost 700 employees across Canada. Today, there are over 400 cooperatives worth over $5 billion. They employ over 7,000 people, representing more than 30,000 businesses. Our great tools to help foster a social economy and build sustainable communities are through Community Economic Development Investment Funds. In Halifax, a farmer's market driven by a CEDIF will soon allow Nova Scotians to invest in buying fresh food locally 6 days a week, year-round, through the Seaport Farmer's Market. Investors involved in this project receive a 30% guaranteed tax credit from the province of Nova Scotia. More than $2 million each year is invested into worthwhile community-based businesses and in enterprises like wind farms that will make a difference far, far into the future. We must continue to utilize these great tools, be innovative, and work together towards a common goal. After all, good people attract great people. Our regional development authorities excel in the area of attracting immigrants to Nova Scotia. This model of community development is unique to Nova Scotia and helps build community capacity. It provides leadership and support to important projects around the province. Our shared vision must encourage new structures, new tools and strategies and resources to enable communities to take charge of their own destinies. We must have the control. Congratulations to Mount St. Vincent University for taking a leadership role in hosting this important conference and for the extensive research being conducted right here in collaboration with community partners from the Social Economy and Sustainable Research Network. We must all continue to demonstrate our leadership, our confidence, and our progressive thinking to create a prosperous economy, not only for this country and for this province, but we want to make this a great place to do business, a great place to work, a great place to live, and a great place to raise our families. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's now my pleasure to introduce our new interim president, Alexa McDonough, president of Mount St. Vincent University. For many of you, she won't need an introduction, but I thought I'd just say a couple of things. In addition to her well-known work as leader for the Nova Scotia NDP, member of parliament, leader of the federal NDP, Alexa McDonough is also a dedicated volunteer and activist on a wide range of issues, and yes, they involve the social economy, including women in politics, combating racism, development, and peace. She works with social economy and advocacy groups to further values of solidarity, justice, equality, human rights, and perhaps most dear to her heart at the moment, peace. It's my distinct pleasure to invite Ms. McDonough to bring greetings on behalf of Mount St. Vincent University.
Well, Dr. Brown, Mr. Minister, our platform guests who are going to be introduced to you more formally in a few moments, and everybody who is assembled here this week for, I think, a very, very important conference. Bienvenue à tout le monde qui vient d'abord de Nouvelle-Écosse. Welcome to those who have come from outside of the province, and let me say how very, very honored I am to have the opportunity to extend greetings and a hearty welcome on behalf of Mount St. Vincent. And I'm delighted about that for three reasons. The first is that this is actually the first time since I had the privilege of assuming the role of interim president, other than for internal events, all of them important, faculty, students, staff, and so on, that I've had an occasion to welcome people on behalf of Mount St. Vincent to this beautiful place and this wonderful university. Secondly, I am a passionate devotee of the work that brings you together. I'm going to jump back over my 29 years in political life to just say that practically all of the work that I was doing prior to that was really in the social economy, although it wasn't so often thought of in that holistic way, and more recently described as such, but in the community development and social policy work that I did for many years, I was very much joined at the hip to the social economy and am very delighted, not so much that the importance is being discovered, because you can't live in this country and you sure can't live in Nova Scotia and not understand the importance, for example, of the credit union movement, of the co-op movement, of non-profit organizations. That's basically what sustains rural communities in many, many cases. And I see our minister nodding. I think there's no question that he brought to his portfolios as economic and rural development minister, minister of responsible for arts and culture, and minister of tourism. Am I right about that? Tourism. That what he brings to that is a background of having worked in these fields where the social economy is the major sustaining force in a great many communities. Thirdly, I am very much looking forward, as I know you all are as well, to hearing from Tim Broadhead tonight. I've long been a huge fan of the work that he does, and he brings a great deal of expertise and experience to this topic. And so I know that you're anxious, as I am, to get on to hear his message. I want to say one other thing. I believe that one of the really important things happening as we contemplate a kind of social economy policy framework is a recognition that there needs to be a real connection between the social economy, in many ways it exists now, but I think a very deliberate, explicit kind of connection with the world of arts and culture. I think at the end of the day, what the social economy is about, and the reason it's so important to be inextricably intertwined with the world of arts and culture, is because this is a movement that is built on an understanding of how hope and optimism need to be at the very center of people's lives. And it's through that kind of interconnection, I think, that we're going to help people to really demand and chart the course to fulfill their dreams. And the reason that we have such a vibrant social economy in many parts of this country, and it's certainly been exceedingly important in Nova Scotia, as mentioned through the work of St. Francis Xavier with the leadership of Moses Cody and Jimmy Tompkins, right up to and including the Cody International Institute, which just celebrated its 50th anniversary. The reason that it is so important is because it recognizes that there's more to the world of work than just earning a living. As critically important as that is, it's about ensuring that people can meet their needs, the needs of their families and the needs of their communities through economic activity. But it's also fundamentally about bringing people together to work, to build community, to build a sense of hope and optimism. And that's why I think it's critically important that we think in terms of that intersection between the social economy and the artists in our midst that is going to really fully deliver the true potential of developing an even stronger and more interconnected social economy than the one that we all recognize today. So good luck with your conference. I'm delighted to be able to be here with you tonight to hear Tim Broadhead, but also hope to be able to spend a good deal of time over the next day and a half taking in many of the proceedings. Thank you so much for the work you do. I think the commitment to try to build a social economy network here in Atlantic Canada is a very important piece of work, and can be important to the future prosperity of this region. Thank you very much and good luck.
Now I'm going to ask Penny Rowe to introduce our keynote speaker.
Well, welcome, everybody. It's a great pleasure to see so many familiar faces, but also to see a lot of new faces here with us on this very important occasion, the opening of our policy colloquium. I have the distinct pleasure of introducing our keynote speaker, Tim Broadhead. When we were planning this conference, the group of us who were involved with discussing what the agenda would look like, we pretty well came to the conclusion that we needed somebody who knew something about the social economy, was familiar with the academic world, probably had some international experience, had done some work around gender development, was fluent in both languages, and we also wanted to be able to walk on water. In any event, after some due deliberation, we were delighted that Tim Broadhead accepted our invitation. Tim is a man who has a long history in Canada and elsewhere of really trying to influence new directions. He's in a very fortunate position now as president and CEO of the J.W. McConnell Family Foundation, which, by the way, is the biggest family foundation in Canada with assets of over $400 million. And as a result of that, Tim, working with the family who controls the funds, has been able to really shape a lot of things that have happened in our country. And one of the things that I've always really liked about Tim, I've known him for quite a while now and have served on different organizations and at conferences and so on with Tim, was the way in which he views things. And I recall reading something about him one time when the interviewer said, Tim, what kind of captures the way in which, you know, you like to work and your leadership style and your kind of values and principles to how you work? And he said, I really like the idea of starting a problem and feeding a solution. Now, he got that from Stephen Covey, but it really is, I think, very telling in terms of the work that Tim does, because he really does like to try to focus on bringing us to a new place and doing what he can to bring us there. So, Tim, it's a great pleasure to have you with us. Anybody who wants to read his bio, it's actually in your program, so you can do that at your leisure. And I'll just remind you, Tim, that we are being live-streamed, and afterwards we will entertain questions and answers.